This is episode 124 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host, and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. As I listen to this back, I started to realize that every job, every skill, everything that you do before you learn your art can be used during performances. It should be used. It's what makes you, you. Your life is different than anybody else's. We need to use that prior life to build a truly unique performance. If you haven't already, make sure to join the Variety Arts Community Facebook group. There's Free for All Fridays where you can promote yourself any way you like, and Marketing Monday, the first Monday of every month, you can post your toughest marketing challenges and someone there will answer. All sorts of cool things. Check it out. Now on with the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
He's a two-time bestsellers list author, motivational keynote speaker on performance and the power of human connections. He mixes magic and motivational themes to create exciting, memorable experiences. His book, Boring Meetings Suck, was named by Inc. magazine as a top 10 and must-read business book. Variety Artist, it's John Petz.
Hey, what's happening? It's the John and John Show.
That's right. In fact, I was going to mention that.
Oh, man,
you have such an awesome name, awesome first name.
It's going to be fun.
It will be fun. Now, tell me about, before we start, actually, tell me about your experience with magic. What is your history with magic?
My father showed me a penny trick when I was 7 years old, which is the, you know, you autograph the penny and he pulls out this box and my penny's inside of a box, inside of a box, inside of a bag. And I was like, wow, that's how it started. I got a Scooby-Doo magic set after that, then the Hatful of Magic set and, you know, birthday parties and restaurants, and it grew and grew. Had a little fun. Grew up watching David Copperfield, probably like so many people.
Oh yeah. He was just on something I was watching on Zoom the other day. It's like, oh my gosh, that's David Copperfield. Check that out.
From his theater basement, was he? I was in a couple shows with him when he was hanging out with some kids. And was that where he was?
Oh, no. He was at the MAES convention, which is the Eastern States Magic Convention thing.
Got it.
Yeah, it was terrific. What is your experience as a magician? I mean, other than birthday parties and things before your speaking career.
I wish I could have done more in college. I could have paid for the whole thing. I did a lot through high school, you know, on that, I would call it the birthday party scene, because that's what I did. Mm-hmm. After college, I didn't do that much of it. I kind of took a little break. And then when I got a real job, I'm like, man, this sucks. So I picked it back up and, you know, the sleight of hand on the main side of it. Wanted to do more, do bigger, and just kind of kept growing with it, but did a lot of restaurant work back in the day and really cut my chops on that and got the sleight of hand going and got some great corporate clients and cocktail parties. And I went that route with it. I never really went the public route. Did some illusions in the earlier days too, because I always wanted to have the big illusion show. I wouldn't say I toured with it, but did go around for a little bit with that and had a ball doing it, but always had a real job most of the time. Had a stint about 2.5 years. I quit the kind of the corporate job. I was in corporate sales and marketing and went full-time magician. That's when I was really traveling a good bit with it. But I had some good clientele that would take me to different corporate events and also fairs and festivals and that market some. And I had fun.
What made you switch from, I don't know if it's a switch as much as a transition, from magician to speaker?
Oh, here's a real story for some folks. So I did corporate 2.5 years, full-time performer, getting married. I needed a real job again. I mean, I survived as a magician as a kid, but I wasn't killing it. Mm-hmm. And went back, got the real job, built up the .com career, you know, one company did really well. Then I ended up in this job you'd think that you'd want as a corporate person. You know, the corner office, I had a company Mercedes, the country club membership, corner office. I mean, literally it was all these things you think you always wanted. Man, I had no interest. I wanted to be out performing. I wanted to go out and have fun.
It's funny how sometimes those things become less important because you're not having a good time, right?
I had no purpose. I had no purpose behind the passion of what I was doing. I was punching the clock and it was a great salary and, you know, all that. But as part of that, I had about 250 sales reps that I was managing, and I was bringing a lot of sales training, sales inspiration. This is where the book actually Boring Meetings Suck came from these years as well. And that concept, the more I melded those together and brought the entertainment to the training and to the sales, it really started to work. And I had other people starting to ask, like, hey, would you come do something for, you know, and these are more friends and clientele that I had previously. We know you're a performer, but I hear you doing, and they started to ask me to come present. And
oh,
that's how it kind of morphed into that. But there's very few people on the magician side who can say they've got business experience to back up. There's a lot of magicians that say, I want to be a speaker because right. it seems to be better money, better business. And you've got to have the true chops, but you got to have some real reasoning and packaged content that's going to make sense to your audience too.
Right. So what was the first one? What was the first one when someone said, you know, they said, hey, I want you to come and speak at my conference because you have all this experience and magic experience and sales experience and all the different experiences.
I love that. It was Nationwide Insurance, which still today is one of my good clients at multiple events a year. I'm not allowed to talk money. I know exactly what I get paid. It was like my first, here's the funny thing about it is I was still had a real job, you know, so I'm still working for the company. And it was like, I was doing the keynote and it was a pretty small, well, it doesn't matter. It was a fraction of what I get paid now. And it was like, I'm the keynote and tomorrow I'm doing Jimmy's birthday party. You know, it was like,
I have a musician friend that talks about that exact same thing. He's a guitarist and he'll guitar for a big band one night. And the next day he's at the local mall, you know, playing backup for somebody.
We all have those good stories. That was when I was doing a festival one, and that wasn't not an ego thing, but I had some pretty good credits to my name, and I was going to do this festival, and I walk in, I'm like looking for this, like the stage and looking for like the AV company. I'm like, where do I go? He's like, well, last year the guy just kind of went over there by the oak tree. Okay. Put me right in my place. I'm like, whatever. Okay, cool. Showtime.
I'm by the oak tree. So let's talk about some of your speaking. Talk about human connections, because I am fascinated by this. I think this is the way to do business, human connections.
Well, and so topical right now. It is truly the lost art of the human connection as we are re-engaging or learning to re-engage. I think probably most people listening to this are somewhat of extroverts, and we're all introverts again because we don't know how to do it. So think of that in a business world. How many people from a sales perspective are used to being on the phones and in front of people and yeah. meeting these folks? And how are we really going to meet people at their level of comfort? Customer service used to be that high touch, that experiential moment. Customer service now is don't talk to me, don't look at me, don't come in my office. Don't, you know, it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
Helping companies realize how they can really embrace those moments and then pull in magic. You know, magic is all about the surprise and the delight, of course, the unexpected and managing those unexpected moments and how we can make people remember us. So they blog, tweet, share, post about who we are, what we do. It plays in beautifully to this world right now.
What are some great tips on connecting with people online?
Wow.
I know that's a tough one, huh?
I'm not an expert at connecting with people online. The stuff that I talk about is mainly how they're going to do it in the face-to-face world when they're back at it. But I think having a genuine, authentic relationship, you know, I get so many LinkedIn, and maybe other people do, LinkedIn requests. And as soon as you have the request, then they're selling me their platform, their service.
Yeah, I get the exact same thing.
It's creating conversations and creating a profile or a brand online where people want to ask you as the answer to the question. You know, you're an entertainer, you're a speaker, you solve my problem, what I have right now. And I've seen you speaking to this and sharing content on this. Like the big thing I've done lately.
It's your little buddy.
There you go, real life.
Who is that?
You want to clean edit or should I keep going? What do you want me to do?
No, I would cut that out, but I love dogs.
That means the UPS person's coming. There's real life of working at home right there.
Yeah, I have the same thing. At some point in time, you'll probably hear my dog barking too. So it's totally no big deal.
What I've shared content on that's actually been really beneficial is the fact that I've done two live events on a large scale from what most people would say as an actual live event right now. And this is being recorded in COVID pandemic season. So I'm just sharing like, here's what we've done. Here's what we've learned. Here's how we've produced event. Here's how we did the clicker wrong on stage. Here's how you need double as many as microphones, just sharing these ideas and content. And it's drawing people to ask questions to me and building relationships in that fashion. So looking what expertise you can share in a non-sales format that will lead and drive conversations to see you as the expert in that function.
So that's the key there, is positioning yourself as the expert in whatever particular field you're going in.
Absolutely in the speaker role. You are not you're an expert that solves problems is what you are.
How would you suggest, I mean, you've used magic and it was kind of organic. Someone asked you, but how would you suggest people listening to this would get into speaking using their art? Because there's all sorts of different arts, from juggling to hula hoop to magic to all sorts of different things. So do you have any suggestions on how they would incorporate that into their speaking?
Yeah, you have to look at it as a story element. Even talking to clients, when people sometimes hear, oh, wait, you also do magic? And it's almost in a derogatory way. Like, it's not, here, let me show you a trick. Hey, let me show you this cool 500 trick. Yeah. And now we're going to talk about teamwork, you know, whatever. Yeah. It has, relevancy is essential to their business. If it's a hula hoop, okay, what does the rhythm, the pacing, the home, the practice, what does that mean to a leader in a HR role? What does your expertise mean to folks? What you've learned through this practice of years and years of work, how can other people truly apply it? So coming up with the right storyline and elements that apply and are relevant to you as an expert at hula hoop, as magic, as juggle, to a person in HR, to sales, to customer service, to, you know, insert industry name here. How are you really going to make that make sense and find value to that person?
You mentioned earlier when you, if you mention magic to somebody who you're talking to about speaking, that it's actually sometimes a derogatory thing.
Well, they don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's their perception of the last magician they saw.
I know I've seen a lot of your videos and I've seen other people speak with different types of art. And usually when they're doing the speech, whatever it is, that's the most entertaining and most interesting part of the routine is the actual art. You know, it's the thing that grabs the audience, or to me anyway. Maybe that's because I'm a magician myself.
It's what they remember. I mean, I could boil it down to, and this is a pick on myself. You know, sometimes it's not what I say, it's how I say it. It's because I say it in a very entertaining, engaging, and energetic way. Mm. Everything has been said. Every sales, customers, I mean, it's just a different story with a different spin and twist, really.
Yeah.
You know, so it's how you present that is uniquely you, which is key. Don't go ripping off people's material and stories. Don't tell the stinking starfish story, for gosh sake. Don't.
No. The old starfish story.
And call yourself a speaker, please. That's embarrassing to you.
So if I were to just be starting tomorrow, and I know this is a crazy question, but if I were to be starting tomorrow, pardon the interruption, but we had some technical difficulties right here. One of John's answers to my question was to join the NSA, the National Speakers Association. You'll hear what it's all about.
And it is not like Toastmasters. It is not a learn to be a better speaker. It is the art of the business of professional content and thought leadership. And my big question early on, because I was doing trade show and birthday, I mean, I was doing it when I quit the job, anything I could to survive, truly. Sure.
Wait, kind of like we are now.
Yes, we're right back here.
Yeah.
The big question was, am I an entertainer with a message, or was I a content leader, a thought leader who was also entertaining? Defining that line is really big. And you can take both paths. Me taking more the speaker path, that doesn't set me up for celebrity status on any of the television shows or anything. And, you know, I had to, and that's okay. I was okay with that. But that was really helpful to understand the business behind being a speaker, because it truly is a business. You need work. It's time. It's effort. It's relationships. It's not just write a book of something cool and now I'm going to get hired for $10 million to be a speaker. Not at all. Thinking business that is hard and extremely competitive, extremely, because there's no barrier of entry. Anyone here could put up a page tomorrow and call themselves a speaker.
Yeah.
God bless you. Good luck. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, if you can figure out a way to make $10 million on one speech, you know, just tell me and I'll.
People have. It's all, you know, it's back end, it's book, it's product, it's consulting. And there's a whole formula to it, but yeah, I haven't, just so we're clear, but.
All right. So tell me the difference between live meetings and virtual meetings not sucking.
So I got dogs going. This is unreal.
That's okay. I like it. It shows you're a human.
Yeah, it shows I didn't shut them up or lock them in the basement is what it shows.
That's okay. Right now I have a blind dog sleeping next to me right over here. He's totally dead asleep. Blind as can be, sleeps with his eyes open. It's kind of freaky, but at least you don't hear him.
The difference between virtual and...
Yeah. Where yeah, were we virtual going? Meetings and live meetings not sucking. How do you make them not suck?
That is a whole separate discussion. In very short background, my first real job was, like I mentioned, technology, sales and marketing, and corporate sales. It was desktop video conferencing. I've literally been doing online meetings since the mid 90s. Mm-hmm. I was with a company that eventually became Skype. We were the first company to packetize video. So if I would have stayed with that, I'd be in Aruba and own an island right now. Mm-hmm. I have a vast amount of experience on that. So I'd love talking about it. The key is, you know, there's a different dynamic. There's a different emotional connection to virtual events and telling a story. And people Zoom schmoom. They want to see a produce. They want to see a television show because that's what our brains are used to. Especially if you're in an all-day conference and event, you've got to give them a show. But that's why people are here. You are showmen, showwomen, hula hoopers, everything. People need that because it's engaging. It's so engaging. And so in a live conference event, a live show, it's guilty attention. If someone's in there and they're disengaged for a second, you know, they look down at their phone and they do their email. Now, if you disengage them for 5 seconds, they're literally at the fridge, they're gone. Yeah. So when you build the dynamics of a conference, of a presentation, of a show that you're offering on Zoom online, you've got to look at these interaction points and how we can connect with someone and how individually we can call out people and how we can bring them emotionally into the show to really pull in that engagement. And some people, we've seen shows I know of too, that really doing it well. Others, I think, could look at that again of how we're going to adapt that process of emotionally connecting with each individual person in some way, shape, or form, or at least have them feel that way.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was on a rant there.
No, go. I love that. We are competing against YouTube. We're competing against TV. We're no longer competing against the other guy on stage. As an entertainer, I don't know a lot of these technical things yet. I'm learning as I go. So putting together an entire show is very difficult for me. I'm doing it and I'm working every day at it, but it isn't a natural thing. You know, I've been entertaining for 25 years, but putting the technical in with it is a whole different ballgame.
And having, I think another thing that some people have done well is having somebody else do the technical for you when you can. If you have the financial setup where someone else can run the show and do your graphics and do the music and do the camera switches if you're doing that.
Yeah.
It's a much more seamless. So you can focus on being you and being the product.
Yeah, that is the thing right now. Now, what platforms have you used?
There's a new one every single day. Social 27. That was the first I've used that. That's a new conference I'm doing. I mean, every Teams to WebEx to GoToMeeting to Zoom, I would say those are some commons for smaller, but for a conference platform, when I have more people wanting, they don't care what I use. They just want to stream for me and they're going to package that and send it out on a Entrata, a Digitel, a Hopin. These are $100,000 platforms just to talk to the folks if it's a different conference like that, depending on what they do. So most importantly, I just need a solid stream, Ethernet, non-wireless stream. Yeah, when you can. I mean, it's not an option for everybody.
Nah, but you're the second person in 2 days that has told me that.
Got to. Yeah.
That's smart. That's so smart.
With your LTE, you know, phone ready as the backup, I even have a generator.
Oh, that's smart. I was just listening to somebody talking yesterday whose power went out right in the middle of doing a show. And it was out for 22 hours. And it's like, well, what, do you have a backup plan? Nope, that's it. I'm just not doing a show for 22 hours. Hopefully people will tune back in or somehow, how do you come back from that?
But you don't, is the answer. Not for 22 hours, you don't.
Yeah. It's the next day. Everybody marked out their calendar for that day.
I mean, some people out there doing ticketed events, I'm sure. If you're selling into this, if we want to call it the corporate association market, giving them that level of confidence, like I've never used a generator, but I mention it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be a pain in the butt to go, but if the whole neighborhood, literally neighborhood Wi-Fi or the Ethernet, someone digs up a cable, I can't control that.
Yeah.
But I do tell them I have backup hotspot ready to go for a wireless if my Ethernet would go out. It's that one extra vote of confidence that someone wants to hear that they're talking and hiring the right person.
It makes them feel a lot better. Yeah.
Totally. Oh yeah. Less risk for their boss when they've explained it to their boss. Hey, I'm hiring this person. Don't worry, they got a generator and backup. Really? I mean, if again, that's this market. If it's your own ticketed event, that's totally different. But
I don't know. I think that's great advice for any market. We always want to give them confidence. So from your book, Boring Meetings Suck, what is an SR? Let me start that again. I'll cut that out.
Dude, if you're not cutting out the dogs, you're not allowed to cut out that.
Okay. From your book, Boring Meetings Suck, what is an SRD? I can't even get it right that time.
I'm so glad you asked. An SRD, is a suckification reduction device. I made up the word and I trademarked it. Suckification. Yeah. So these are quick tips and tricks that we can use in everyday. The book is written for kind of white collar office America, but quick tips that they don't spend a whole lot of time working on that they can use, whether they're in charge of the meeting or participant, to make the meeting more effective. So quick hits that they can use.
That's in your book, or yep. Do you have a list that someone else can get, or do they need to get your book?
Email me and talk. I can talk all day, but no, get the book. I mean, I don't have a list that I give out for that. No, that's proprietary content, intellectual property, but by the book, I make $1.20 per book. Yeah, it's great.
Hey!
It'll almost be.
You'll make like $9 by doing this podcast. All right, let's go on to factor something John just made up. Sound like fun?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, let's do that.
Is it fat? Or is it something John just made up?
Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you a headline and you're going to tell me whether it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
Okay.
Here we go. John was an Amish model.
That was a what model? An Amish model?
Amish? Oh my God.
That is so true. So true.
Is it true? Yeah.
It is. I was born in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and my mom was a part of like the women's JCs or whatever, one of those social groups. If you don't know, Pennsylvania is like major Amish. We would go to different festivals and they would like, this is what the Amish wear. And I was like the little boy Amish kid who would hide behind his mother at like 3 and 4 years old and be like, and the little Amish boy wears this. And I'd have to walk out and yeah, I was an Amish model.
Where does an Amish model appear? Is that a live model? Do you do Amish magazines? How does that work?
I was never that. Well, they don't read the magazine.
They're Amish. That's why I ask.
It was for the general population to better understand the Amish culture.
Ah, I see. All right. Next headline. John went skydiving simply to create an opening video bit for a client.
So awesome. And one day I'm going to do that.
So awesome and so false. Is that what you're saying?
I've done a lot of opening videos, custom videos, run-in opening conference videos. And that one is on my list where I've not yet done it. No, I will for somebody at some point, but I haven't yet. So that's a hope.
Boy, that's a great idea. If somebody listening to this does that video, make sure you send it to me or send it to John so we can take a look and give him credit. All right. Third one. Last one. John exposed his wife during a live show with her family in the audience.
Well, we already did the false one, so they know this one's true, right?
I guess so.
How much do you want me to expose of what happened?
Well, just tell us what went on.
This is Miracles and Magic is a show I've produced for 18 years. It's a large charity foundation show. And early on, this is when we were back in the high school before we took it downtown. This was the, I won't expose the illusion. It was a illusion where she gets in and I scrunch her up into a smaller thing. And there's this little roller blind shade and I borrowed the prop. Little do I know. If you can think of the illusion and you know the illusion, you know how the person's positioned in there. So she's in a very interesting, awkward position. And of course, not to be seen that way, but this roller blind just goes up by itself. I have no idea. And I turn and I look, and there is my wife in a family audience, smiling away, has no idea herself, no idea. But her whole, you know, neck down in a skirt, just, I'm trying to be G-rated. I don't know who's listening.
Yeah, that's it.
Let's just say exposed. There you go.
Okay. So is the audience like more?
I got more compliments of that show than I've ever had before.
Yeah, aren't you doing that illusion again next week? We're gonna.
I do it every day. Yeah.
Tell me about Miracles and Magic then. I know this isn't really on the subject, but what is Miracles and Magic?
That was a passion project. I had a really unique experience in a hospital that would have been 2002. I didn't have a whole lot of money to donate back then. So it was, let's try to see if I can raise some money for some kids. And it was get kids out of the hospital, forget about chemotherapy, forget about shots, forget about hospital beds, and just give them an opportunity to enjoy the wonderment and laughter of magic. Mm-hmm. And started in a local school, and 18 years later, we've raised almost $2 million and donated Wow. back to local hospitals and local organizations that support kids in a life-threatening condition and continue to provide them adventures. So we've had magicians from literally all over the world come in and perform, and it's been a spectacular thing we've been able to do. I'm excited.
How does somebody listening to this get involved in that? Or do you accept outside people?
Always looking. It's one of those, whenever someone calls, I'm like, just, you know, this is a charity show, you know, we have budget, but it's not, you know, it's not a fancy website, miraclesmagic.com. I did it myself. You can certainly see what it's about, who's been there in the past. And if someone is looking, we're always looking for the next act. We always give them a new show.
Excellent.
You'll certainly see some names you've heard of and some you haven't heard of. It's gotten really some great national and international attention. It's been neat. We've taken it through multiple cities in the country. Would love to take it to more cities, but need help. That's a big project.
Listen to that, everybody.
That was fact. Or something John just made up.
John, me, not you. Well, actually, you made that one up. one of the Johns made that up. We do have a fan question. You want a fan question?
Absolutely. I didn't know there was any fans.
Yeah. Every time I interview somebody new, I put on my Facebook group, the Variety Arts Community Facebook group, ask questions to me that I will ask of our guest.
Awesome.
So here we go. Annie Benani, who is one of the top balloon artists in the country, asks, what's a good process for personalizing presentations to each company?
Thank you for the question, Annie Benani. The process, I guess it depends on your skill set. I will tell you, I can take a company brochure and in an hour you think I work for them because I can memorize and then look for those I look for the taglines that will relate to a trick that I have in my arsenal, so I don't have to create something new ideally. So I begin to, let's take, you know, actually I made a line of it, like the 500. That's a, you know, the 500, it's a magic trick where you change ones to hundreds, and it's tons of people do it. It's a marketed effect. It's not my own, but there's a return on investment. Someone's talking about, here's the ROI for using our product or service. I'm like, 500. So we talk about attribute one, attribute two, attribute three, here's the $5. But when you put this together, working with the John and John show, look at the amazing return on investment you can have. Bam. There's the result of it. And you can do that too. And so looking for core concepts or content that they have as part of their marketing, their taglines, their mission statement, their pillars of value, whatever that company might have, and tie it to balloon. Look for common words, commonalities, stuff of reference, perspective that can relate to something that you do really well. So you can tell the story while you're doing the trick and make it purposeful to them.
Oh, that's perfect. And in fact, Annie Benani is a balloon storyteller. That's what she does. She tells stories with balloons. So it'd be very easy for her to incorporate exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. If they could see me, I'm dropping the mic for Annie. I'm like, boom, Annie, that is your gate. That's it. You're on.
There you go. You got it. Well, now, before I let you go, do you have anything you want to plug? Any sort of social media you want to plug before I let you go?
I'm an easy find. John Petz or John Petz Live out there.
Spell Petz for us.
P-E-T-Z, and I am a J-O-N John, although I own both. So that's another little tip, you know, get your URL spelled wrong three different ways so people can find you. Plug, you know, Miracles of Magic was a good plug. If they want to look up the books, I'm an easy Google. You can see the books. I don't really market effects to magicians or entertainers. The only thing I've done, I coach a very small group of people. If anyone's interested in that, not here marketing that really, but I'm a no name in the magician world and I like it that way.
Yeah.
It's a very successful business when you treat it like a business and you can run it like that. And you're still doing what you love.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks, John, for doing my show. That was fun.
Thanks for hanging out with me. I appreciate it.
And thanks to all my Variety Artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artists podcast. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.